Geopolitical tensions are escalating, inflation is raging despite what they say. Stocks are sinking, debt is rising, and your own financial future isn't looking too clever. Yet gold endures crisis. Wars, disasters, no calamity has beaten gold. While paper assets crash and burn, gold endures. You need to take a fresh look at gold steadying your portfolio. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with new IRAs this month. Help shield your savings with a Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins the program. And we have a great discussion. As you know, I'm a Trump supporter. I'm not going to be voting for him. And we asked some really simple questions. Who is he going to put on the Supreme Court? What Supreme Court justice does he most admire? And what does he think about immigration? Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Become a member at charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. So check it out right now, charliekirk.com, and click on the members tab. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. We are here with Bobby Kennedy. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Charlie.
I've been texting you, I think, for about a year, trying to get you on the show, and thank you for joining. You're here in Arizona, the beginning of ballot access here in Arizona. Is that right?
Yes. We have a rally in Phoenix today.
And so, and that is to get on the ballot as a independent. Is that right?
Yeah. I think we need 18,000 signatures in the state.
So walk us through. You were running as a Democrat. That was irritating, frustrating, to say the least. And then you decided now to run as independent. Tell us about that.
It became clear that the Democratic Party was not going to let me win, even if I won. So, for example, they changed. Somebody did a compilation of about 60 rules that had been changed to make sure that nobody could win. I heard, although I don't know this is true, that this week they actually made it, they're going to get rid of, the Democratic Party announced that they don't need a primary in Florida. So, and I don't know, you know, how true that is, but you can look it up. But one thing they did do, I'll tell you, one of the rules that they adopted was a rule that any candidate who steps their foot into the state of New Hampshire, that any votes that they received in New Hampshire would not count. And they had they were working on the same rule for Iowa, and then they had a proposed rule for Georgia that said that if you stepped into New Hampshire, no vote in Georgia would count for you. And then they had stacked all of the superdelegates. This new group of superdelegates they called PLEOs, public and elected officials, and so that even if you won sufficient delegates, they could still take it away from you. And it became clear to me that I was not, even if I won, I was not going to get the nomination, even if I won the vote. So I was the last person in my campaign to say, okay, it's time to leave the Democratic Party. Dennis Kucinich was telling me that from the first month.
He would know about.
Yeah.
So does it, I know you've spoken about this before, but you still see yourself as a Democrat. Is that right? Even though it's the Democrat Party is some form of, I mean, is it fair to say it's kind of almost closer to running like an oligarchy than a democracy, at least the Democrat Party?
Yeah, I would go along with that. It's unrecognizable to me from what it was, you know, from what I grew up with.
Yeah, and so speaking of ballot access, and you've spoken out about this, the Colorado Supreme Court recently said Donald Trump's not allowed on the ballot because he allegedly, they say he engaged in insurrection or rebellion. What is your reaction?
It's one of the craziest decisions that I've seen, and it's terrible. I mean, it's just terrible that they, you know, people, half the country wants to vote for Donald Trump, somewhere around half. And, you know, if another country did that, like Pakistan or Iran or...
We would sanction them.
Well, yeah, we'd say that's not really a democracy. But, you know, we're doing it now. We're trying to, I'm not a huge fan of Donald Trump's. That's why I'm running against him. But I don't want to beat him in a fixed, you know, fight. And what's going to happen if they do that, if they succeed, which I don't think they will. The decision is crazy. But, you know, then it's going to leave half the people angry. And rightly so, they should be. People should be able to vote for who they want to vote for. And even if he was, you know, and by the way, it was no due process. He wasn't convicted of insurrection.
Or even indicted, yeah.
You know, or indicted for it. So, and there was no evidentiary hearing. So, and this is a hugely consequential sanction. Not with the consequences to him, but also to our whole country. And you're going to do that without due process, without him being given the essential democratic function that, you know, of being able to confront your accusers and, you know, all of these things that we guarantee people who are criminally charged. And we're not going to give him that. It's a crazy decision. It was a split decision. It was 4-3.
Yeah, and it certainly foments more radicalism in the country.
Of course. I think they're trying to hurt Donald Trump. And this is going to me, this is going to help him because, you know, it's going to fortify people's belief that the system is rigged and it's rigged against them and that they're trying to, you know, they're trying to screw the little guy.
So just focusing on one thing you said you're running against Trump. Do you look at yourself as running equally against Trump and Biden?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say are the chief objections to both? If you were to say, since you're running against both, these are my objections to Trump, these are my objections to Biden.
I mean, I think my biggest objection, Biden is, I just don't think he is capable of governing the country. He can't do an unscripted conversation or encounter with a voter. Even the scripted ones are falling apart. So I don't think, you know, I don't even know if there's a sort of a coherent, you know, governing philosophy that he has that I would object to. I just think that there's a competency question at this point and that he needs to answer, which means he has to debate, which I don't think that they're capable of doing. With President Trump, my objection to him is that I don't, you know, he had a chance. And, you know, the big things that I object to, the biggest thing that I object to is the lockdowns. Oh, he locked down 3.3 million businesses in this country with no due process, with no just compensation, with no scientific citation, with none of the processes of democracy, like, you know, notice and comment, rulemaking, an environmental impact statement, the things that you have to do to involve, you know, to involve the public in momentous decisions like that, you know, violated the Constitution. And that shifted $4 trillion north in wealth. We created a billionaire a day during that 500 day, this new oligarchy of billionaires. That was a zero-sum wealth. It was just a shift in wealth upward from the beleaguered American middle class. And then there was a number of other decisions he made during that crisis moment of American history when you really want you want a president who can stand up to his bureaucracy and to ask questions and to go into the weeds and to have, you know, to stick by his instincts. He knew that hydroxychloroquine was going to work. And yet he got rolled by his bureaucrats again, and they, you know, they ended up denying access to it to the American public.
Yeah, so
public.
I think that's an interesting point. By the way, I would tend to agree as a Trump supporter, as you well know.
Yeah.
I would say that the lockdowns are probably the best argument against, you know, all what the 4 years what I would consider a big success.
I would also say appointing John Bolton to the head of the NSA.
Totally agree. John Bolton should be deported from the country. So I'm not a warmonger. But I want to zero in. Would you at least acknowledge that Trump had flares of instincts that were correct? Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. And he also, he did leave it more to the states than I think people would probably recognize. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's true. But let me say something, and I don't, you know, you're very kind to have me on here because I know that you're a very strong supporter of President Trump's. But during my uncle's administration, during, you know, President Kennedy's administration, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there were, my uncle was reluctant, had a reluctance to invade Cuba. And we now know that if he had invaded, there were 64 missile systems that were now we know that the warheads were fully activated. And each one of those missile systems, the commander of the missile system, and this was insane from the Soviet point of view, had authority to launch if they felt endangered. So they had to make, they got to make the individual decision. So we would have had a nuclear exchange. And there were 13 people on the ExCon committee, which is the little committee of like Dean Acheson, Bob McNamara, all the, you know, top dogs, Louis Lemenser, the Joint Chiefs, who were all in on the huddle. My father lived at the White House for 13 days. He didn't commute even to my house, which is a 15-minute drive. He lived on a cot in the White House, and this committee was meeting all day long. During the final vote, they started out with 11 people for invasion, and only two, my father and Bob McNamara, against it. They ended the last vote they took, and this is not on the recordings, but I know this story, that there was eight people who, my uncle had a vote, the final vote, and they voted 8-6 for invasion, and my uncle said the sixes have it. So all of his guys who were, you know, the senior officials, the senior CIA people were all telling him, you've got to go in. And he was able to say to them, let me see the aerial photographs. And then he asked them questions. He said, are those Cuban gun crews or are they Russian gun crews? They said, we think they're Russian. They're no. He said, are they, if I kill Russians over there, hundreds of them, isn't Khrushchev going to have to come into Berlin and take Berlin? And they said, we don't think he has the guts to do that. So that's what their, you know, excuse was. And my uncle said, okay, we're not going to do what you guys are telling me to do. So he was able to go deep into the issue and then stand up to his bureaucracy. And I think that that was something that President Trump was not able to do. He had very, very good instincts, as you say. And I don't think he had the discipline to be able to actually sit down and do the research himself that would allow him to stand up to people who, you know, who are the authorities.
The world is in flames and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster. But it won't ruin my day. That's because I start my day with a hot America First cup of blackout coffee. Now, I've been trying to trim how much coffee I have, but when I have coffee, it's blackout coffee. This coffee is 100% America and 0% grift. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values, from sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping. They embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. By the way, I was traveling recently, and somebody brought me a cup of coffee, and it tasted really bad. It was really bad. I said, where's my blackout? And they said, we didn't bring the blackout on this trip. And I was really disappointed. It was a tough day. When you get used to Blackout Coffee, you know what I mean. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Use coupon code Charlie for 20% off your first order. By the way, it's kind of coffee season, isn't it? Gets dark around like 3:30. It's cloudy. It's not exactly the most uplifting weather. You kind of need to pick me up sometimes around 2 p.m. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Be awake, not woke. That is blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie. The taste is amazing. It is smooth. And people know that I need my cup of coffee in the morning. Not too much. Not over the top. But if it's not blackout, then the mood is not so good. Go south. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Great company. blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie.
So focusing on the Biden aspect of it, I agree. He's senile, and here you are doing what, like 500 push-ups in a Twitter video or something, and you're like yoked up and all that. He can't even walk in a straight line. But as someone who says you still are a Democrat, what would you say you
agree? Well, I'm an independent.
Okay, fair enough. But you were running in the Democrat primary, right? So what would you agree with Biden on?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think he, you know, I what I agreed with, the thing that made me a Democrat, Charlie, is the traditional Democratic platform, which I would sort of check all the boxes. The Democrats were traditionally anti-war. They were skeptical of the military-industrial complex, of the corporate control of our democracy. They were pro-environment. They were pro-women's rights and, you know, bodily autonomy. They were skeptical of the pharmaceutical industry and the other big corporations. So that's, you know, and that those are the boxes that I would check. And I don't know how much of that, you know, I don't even know what President Biden believes in on those issues.
So the one interesting thing for me to look at as an outsider has been, you know, we're here in a border state, and right now there's 12 to 15,000 people coming in through the southern border. As president, what if you were president of the United States, what is your stance on? Would you call it an invasion?
Yeah, I would shut down the border and do it immediately, even if it took deploying the military at this point. And what we need is, you know, we need asylum court judges. There's a backlog on the asylum courts of 7 years. There's something like 4,000 cases. And I, you know, I have to check this figure, but it's something like 4,000 cases for every asylum court judge. There's 3 million cases out there. And we need asylum court judges on the border before people get in to adjudicate their cases before you. Once they get in, if they have an asylum claim, you have to give them a hearing. So we need to be able to adjudicate those at the border. We can't be letting, I mean, we're letting the Mexican drug cartels dictate and control our immigration policy. And there's been 7 million have come across in the last 3 years. As you point, and there's the legal immigration during that period was 3.1 million. So there's double, the cartels have brought in double what legal immigration, the people who are waiting in line. And we need to put an end to it and do it very quickly.
Just speaking as someone who would run more in circles I'm not in, do you think the Democrat Party's using immigration as a political strategy?
I can't believe it's a good political strategy for them. My impression, I try not to speculate about what motivates people.
But I hate to interrupt. It makes me wonder, like, who would want this? It's 20,000 people a day sometimes.
It's inexplicable.
Okay. So what would you get? What would be your best guess?
I don't know. Because I don't even know how the decisions are made. I don't know if it's Mayorkas who is making the call or, you know, what I saw when I was at the border. So I'm just telling you what I have seen. What I saw was a level of pettiness that was almost beyond description. Where, and I'll tell you my concrete example of that. President Trump built, and I was against building the wall.
Are you still?
No. Now I think it was absolutely important. You don't need to build a wall 2,200 miles from San Diego to Brownsville, Texas. The populated areas, you definitely need a physical barrier, and it's got to be a wall. So so when I went down there, there's about 20, I think 27 or more huge gaps in the wall. Some of them are big, some of them are little. Sitting in a pile there was tens of millions of dollars of construction material that was the missing parts of the wall. And the day that President Biden came in, they not only removed the cameras, the video surveillance, the motion detectors, and the lights and the towers, which you could also see piled there where they'd been literally torn up out of the ground. But they left all that construction material instead of finishing the wall, finishing those gaps, they left the construction material sitting there. So the Border Patrol kept begging and pleading. 9 Border Patrolmen. I was told by Chief Clam, Chris Clam, who was the chief of the Border Patrol, that 9 Border Patrolmen had committed suicide in the last year or so because they're so demoralized about what's happening. He's been pleading with Mayorkas to come down and see what's happening. So Mayorkas did come down, who's the head of DHS, for people don't know. He's in charge of protecting our borders. So what was happening? He said, okay, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to patch those places in the fence. But he said, I don't want to use Trump's wall. So we're going to order new material. And so if you go down there to Yuma today, right, we're in Arizona. You go down to Yuma.
Southwestern Arizona, yes.
You'll see parts of the wall that are Trump wall. And then these other parts, which are dark, kind of dark reddish color. And then the Biden wall, which looks kind of like a chain link fence.
It says Bienvenidos to America. I'm kidding.
Exactly. Well, there's also no foundation under it. So you can go under it.
No, the whole thing's insane. But anyway,
the point I'm making is that they did this. Mayorkas needed different wall so that nobody would call it the Trump wall. It could now be the Biden wall. And, you know, that shows a level of pettiness that,
well, and
you
just
know,
dishonesty. Yeah, I mean, because they've said forever walls are racist and all that.
Listen up, parents. You and I know that kids' entertainment options are awful. Shows and books constantly try to sneak woke and progressive agendas onto our kids. You can't look away for a minute without fear of what might pop up. But there is good news. It's called Sherwood. Sherwood is your new alternative to Disney Plus, Kindle, and Audible, all rolled into one. Sherwood's library of ebooks, audio, and videos actually share your values. No ads and no agendas, just wholesome entertainment. But listen, Sherwood just launched, and right now, when you sign up for 1 year, you can get additional 3 years for free. This deal will not last long, so click the link or head on over to SherwoodKids.com/Kirk. I'm telling you, don't miss this one. Our kids need better options, and I am choosing Sherwood.
So you mentioned your uncle, JFK, who I really admire, by the way, and I think he was killed by the intel agencies. And in a different conversation, I'd love to chat with you about that. But your other uncle, Ted Kennedy, was big on immigration, as you well know, and transformed the legal immigration system and took green cards over 1 million a year. And I know this is a wonky question, but is there a set number of legal immigrants you think our country should take? Are we taking too many right now?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, I'd love to hear the arguments either way about.
Well, like,
I mean,
tell
me this: yeah. How many do you think?
Well, I'm not running for president. I think we should have a moratorium, right?
So, like a complete moratorium.
Well, of course, yeah.
And then harm businesses that like need workers?
It could harm multi-billion-dollar, trillion-dollar tech companies. Yeah, but
you don't think anybody else would be harmed by it?
Potentially, but I think that allowing yourself to digest the big meal of mass immigration that we've been having the last decade is probably not just important, it's critical. But again, my position is just, you know, a talk show host. I'm not running for president. But I mean, let me ask you, like, do you look at Minnesota that's now basically become mini Mogadishu? Like, does that bother you that we've allowed hundreds of thousands of Somalians who don't assimilate into our country into Minnesota?
Well, I would not say that the racial issue is.
Well, it's not racial. It's more cultural, right? So I don't care if they're black or whatever. They're Islamists.
So it's a religious issue for you.
It's cultural, right? I mean, do you think Ilhan Omar has assimilated to the country well?
Well, I don't know Ilhan Omar. I know that there's a lot of Muslims in this country that have assimilated and that are proud to be American who are not radicalized. So I don't know.
Well, like, for example, does it bother you in Minneapolis the call to prayer is broadcast 5 times a day and that they've changed the flag of Minnesota to be basically identical to that of the Somali flag, literally the flag of Minnesota?
Yeah, I don't – you know, there's other things that bother me about this terribly. And what bothers me is that there's 110,000 people on the sidewalks in New York who don't have papers and who are now being, you know, they sold this as a humanitarian solution, and these are people who are being preyed upon by unscrupulous employers.
Well, of course, I agree with that, but
and they're staying on the, you know, they're living on the playing fields, which have now been converted to housing, so our kids aren't able to play sports. Oh, if you're saying, you know, should we have a national limitation on allowing Muslims in this country, I would say that seems inconsistent with our, you know, our...
Again, I'm saying Somalians who, again, don't assimilate. Again, I have some Muslim friends as well, but I'm asking you, because I know you're running for president, just and you don't have an answer, that's fine. Do you think that we should rethink the legal immigration system, chain migration? I have a relative here. Are there certain countries we should prioritize over others?
I think we should have an immigration system that serves America's national interests.
What does that look like?
It would be an immigration system that says, you know, what kind of jobs do we need in this country?
So business should dictate our immigration system?
Business.
But didn't you spend your whole career suing these businesses?
But not for immigration policies.
But like if the Koch brothers said they need 100,000 people, should we listen to them?
Well, I would love to hear their argument. If they're saying they need 100,000 here or they have to ship there.
But why don't they hire Americans and like pay them better wages? Yeah, isn't that a Democrat position?
Yeah. And by the way, I spent 20 years working with Cesar Chavez. And
he was an immigration hawk.
He was an immigration hawk. He wanted to end illegal immigration. I mean, there are two issues that I really worked with. One issue I worked on, which is pesticides, which just disproportionately harm Hispanic farm workers. But his other biggest issue, and I was a pallbearer in his funeral, his other biggest issue was ending immigration. He wanted to, because of what it was doing to the American worker. So, yeah, I mean, those are all issues that are critically important. So, I want to hear from the business. I can't answer you this question, Charlie, because I don't have an ideological position on it.
I have a very, very practical position,
which is what's good for America, what's good for building the middle class, what's good for increasing wages to workers in this country.
Respectfully, you say we're going to listen to business.
Well, I'm going to listen to everybody.
Okay, but the voters that you're trying to win over are telling you no more immigrants. Overwhelmingly, polls are saying we have too many people coming into the country, both legal and illegal. So as president, if the voters say, hey, we want to shut off immigration, which, by the way, many countries in the Western world are screaming that, right? Holland, Germany is saying it, the ascendant political party there, they're saying no more mass migration, both legal and illegal. As president, would you listen to the cries of the people?
Well, Of course I'm going to listen to the cries of the people.
No, because, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I think the issue that people are alarmed by what's happening right now, and they should be. I think today or yesterday, 14,000 people came across as the record. And I'm alarmed by it. You know, I went down there and watched 300 people come across. I interviewed half of them. And, you know,
it's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's wrong. And it's wrong from a lot of different points of view. And, you know, I want an immigration policy, like I said, that brings back America's middle class, that serves the need. I'm, you know, environmentalists like myself, we're normally, you know, we're opposed to, we think that we should be able to have sustainable economies that don't require, you know, constant influx of new populations.
No,
of course. So, I'm open to all of these. Like I say, I don't have any ideology on it. I have a really practical approach, and
sure,
I want to hear everybody's opinion.
So
I do. Can I do it?
Yeah, we're running out of. I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the things as president, obviously, you get to appoint Supreme Court justices, and the Supreme Court is more important than ever as a check and balance. Which current or recent Supreme Court justice is closest to your ideas or what you would appoint?
I couldn't answer that. I would say, you know, I'm going to appoint judges who reflect my values.
But what are those values? Because, well, President Trump has a list, to his credit. Here are the 65 people. I mean, would it be more like Kagan or more like Clarence Thomas?
It would. I don't know. I wouldn't answer that.
but respectfully, you're running for president. The voters, that's a huge issue for voters.
But
especially when it comes to Second Amendment rights, abortion. Please continue.
I mean, I can tell you what my important issues for me are. Free market capitalism, strong environmental protection, strong liberties, human rights, civil rights, bodily autonomy, and skepticism toward big business.
I share that.
And toward the corporate control of our country and a hostility toward corruption. So those are the issues. I'm not going to tell you.
But who's your favorite Supreme Court justice ever?
Ever?
Just one that you would say that you think did a good job.
Earl Warren.
Okay. So the Warren court that got rid of prayer in public schools.
Well, the Warren court that gave, I'm not going to, this is why I don't want to pick a particular
But you
justice.
Have to, because voters vote on the Supreme
Court.
Well,
yeah, but I'm telling you what I would look
for. Fair enough. I'm just
in a justice, but I'm not going to endorse every decision. So if I can see, the trick here, which
it's
is.
Not a trick.
I name a judge and you're going to pick a decision that, I would not endorse. That's why I'm telling you that, I can tell you what I want, which is civil rights, liberties, free market capitalism, strong environmental protection, and hostility to corporate corruption and corporate control of our government.
And it's not a trick. You're running for president, so I have respect for you.
But it's a trick to say endorse every decision by this particular judge.
Fair enough. I don't call it a trick. I'm just trying to understand, because these are questions voters have, right?
I'm very open and transparent about what I want, but I'm not going to pick a judge and endorse every decision that they've ever made.
Okay, but fair enough. So if you had judges lined up as president and one that supported affirmative action, would that be one that you would want?
It wouldn't disqualify him if everything else that judge endorsed with things that reflected my values. So I would look at the whole package. Okay. There could be people up there who believe in things that I don't believe in, but if they believe in...
Sure. So the big kahuna is abortion, obviously. As someone who has a great record on medical freedom... And I know that. I'm not BSing. Meaning I believe that. I do have to ask, when do you think life begins?
What do you mean by life?
Human life. Life worthy of the protection of the government. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When should the government come and protect life?
Well, my position is that we need to trust the women to make that choice, because I don't trust government to make any choices as well, particularly when it comes to bodily autonomy. Now, I would say later on in the pregnancy that government has a much larger claim to, after the first trimester, philosophically has a higher claim to protect that child when they're viable. But I would leave it to the woman, because I don't trust the government. And I've worked my entire life on medical autonomy and bodily autonomy and freedom from the government telling us what we can and can't do with our bodies. I'll say this about abortion. I think the amount of money that we, 85% of the abortions in this country are with black women. And if you look where the Planned Parenthood facilities are constructed, they're disproportionately in black neighborhoods. And I think that it's mainly poor people who are getting abortions. And what I would say is that nobody should have to get an abortion in this country because they're scared about their capacity to take care of that child. That we ought to be doing everything we can to make sure that nobody makes that choice. Nobody has to make that choice. I think every abortion is a tragedy that the government, that we should do everything we can as a society to make sure that they don't happen.
MyPillow is excited to bring you their biggest bedding sale ever, and just in time for Christmas. For a limited time, get the Giza Dream Bed Sheets for as low as $29.98, a set of pillowcases for just $9.98, and rejuvenate your bed with MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. They also have blankets in variety of sizes and colors and styles. They even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more. All the biggest discounts of the year are happening now. They're extending their money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2024, making them the perfect gift for your friends and your family and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Kirk or call 1-800-875-0425. Get big discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including the Giza Dream Sheets for as low as $29.98, and get all your shopping done now while quantities last. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk.
To seek clarity and not agreement, just pivoting off of the mention of the black community, I want to make sure your position is clear. Do you support reparations for the black community?
I think reparations, race-based reparations, are unconstitutional under the Harvard decision.
So you would honor the recent... You mean the recent one in the, just the last 8-9 months?
Yeah. I think they're clearly unconstitutional under that, if they're race-based.
And so you think that was the correct decision?
Well, I have a program that is on our website for targeted community repair, but it's not race-based. It's about rebuilding poor communities in these countries, and some of the poorest communities in these countries are farm communities and rural communities and Rust Belt communities that are as poor or more poor than Appalachian communities, that are as poor or more poor than urban communities, and I think we need to rebuild all of them.
So the concern that I hear from some people with your candidacy, and I want you to address this, is that you running might hurt Donald Trump's chances of becoming president, that you're doing this as a left-wing Democrat to kind of capitalize on some COVID frustration and some well-earned respect on medical freedom. How would you respond to that?
I'm running to win. I'm not running to hurt. I'm not President Biden or President Trump. I'm running, and I'm not, running in ways that are vituperative or vitriolic against them. I don't get, I don't engage in personal attacks or any of those against either of those candidates. I respect both of them and the office that they held, but I don't think either of them did a great job as president, and I think I'll be a better president than them.
So and by the way, I deeply appreciate your commitment to free speech and coming on here to talk to, as you know, a vocal Trump supporter. What's your pitch to a Trump supporter watching this or listening to this right now?
I think it's the pitch that I made before, that, I think President Trump had it right on the medical freedom issues. I think he had it right on the war issues in his rhetoric. But I don't think he executed well. And if you want a president who's actually going to dismantle this corporate capture that's going to dismantle the corrupt merger of state and corporate power, that's going to address problems with the Fed, the capture of that agency by...
You mean the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, by, big banks with a policy that is designed to strip the American middle class of equity and shift wealth upward. If you want a president who's going to actually address the problems at the CIA... and who's going to reform that agency, which President Trump never even attempted to do. That agency now is just has been captured by the military contractors and military industrial complex.
The war machine.
And the war machine and its function, which my uncle recognized. My uncle was going to completely reorganize the CIA in his second term. My father, when he ran, had a plan for reorganizing them, and we need to do that. We need to finally implement that plan, and I don't think that those are things. I don't think that President Trump is capable of getting into the weeds to do the kind of reforms that you need to do and to stand up to the bureaucracies in the process. So that is the pitch that I'd make. If you want, the America back, the America I think we all envision, I don't think that he's going to give it back to you, and I will.
We don't agree on everything, but I appreciate the commitment to dialogue, Bobby. And if there were more Democrats like you, America would be in a better spot. So,
Charlie, thank you so much. And thanks for having somebody on that you disagree with on so many issues. What? I always, you know, enjoy talking to you. And I'm grateful to you.
Thank you, man. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. And God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
Ah, ho, ho, ho.
Hey, what's wrong, Santa?
Well, it's these elves. The new ones all feel entitled. They don't want to work their way up the ladder. In fact, they hardly want to work at all. Then there's those social justice elves. They keep pointing out everyone's differences, dividing the elves and getting them all riled up. And don't get me started about the reindeer rights elves. The shop floor just isn't the happy little place it used to be.
We should have used Red Balloon.
That's right, Santa. RedBalloon.work is America's woke-free job board. Every day, we help good companies find reliable, motivated job seekers without all the woke nonsense. And our new Red Balloon recruiter service is turning traditional corporate recruiting on its head, delivering high-quality employees for a fraction of the price. Give yourself a Christmas gift and post your jobs on RedBalloon.work today. And use promo code SALEM to get 10% off your first month's job posting, because life's too short for a bad hire.